Hello and welcome to Speaking Of, conversations on voice, speech, and identity with me, Ryan O'Shea. Each episode, I'm talking with a guest who has a real question about voice, speech, or presence. Then I'm guiding them through concepts and exercises to help them and you understand a bit more about their question. This is a bonus episode because it's actually an episode of another podcast, The Modern Actor. In The Modern Actor podcast, host Eddie Ramos interviews artists working in the film industry, and I'm sharing the episode where I was his guest talking about the importance of voice and breathwork for actors. We'll be back with me as your host next time. For now, enjoy my interview with Eddie Ramos of The Modern Actor.
Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
Welcome to the Modern Actor podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, and we are recording in your space, so thank you for having me. I should
clarify.
Happy
to have you. Either way.
This is amazing. I'm so happy to be back. The last time I saw you was a year ago.
Yeah.
I came for training for Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
I played Romeo.
Yes, you did. You were great. I know I told you that, but you were great.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And it was because of your help. We did so much work on my voice. I realized that since my training back in Syracuse, and I left in 2013, I really hadn't, revisited the voice, and especially for the stage. I had done a lot of film, but that requires, it actually doesn't require anything different. It requires all the same muscles, all the same, strength and everything, we talked about on your podcast.
Yeah.
But anyway, you helped me so much. And what I felt I was dealing with was this like pushing and this straining.
Yeah.
Do you find that that's something that actors kind of do on a broad basis, this like pushing and feeling?
Yeah, I think so. I think especially when there's just like a lack of understanding of the basic functioning of the breath system, really your respiratory system, right? Where people think of, oh, the voice is literally like right here in my throat and my lungs are literally right here in my ribs.
Everything's disconnected.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's all I need to know, right?
Or
this is my voice. So I just, all of the sound focuses here, right? But then what ends up happening is that a lot of people end up going, oh, I have to get louder. So then they start to push and actually end up tensing right around their larynx or their voice box,
right?
Where actually, like, lesson number one with every client, every class that I teach, one of the first things that I do is that I show people a video of the diaphragm in action, right?
Yeah.
It's like an animation.
Obviously. I do remember that. You're right. Yeah, that was the first class. We sat by your computer and watched the video.
Exactly.
Yes. Oh my God.
Exactly. Yeah. Because the diaphragm, while it's almost completely an involuntary muscle, like your diaphragm is moving as you breathe, whether you're thinking about it or not, right? While it's mostly involuntary, it is affected by some other muscles that are voluntary, namely like your abdominal muscles, your core, your pelvic floor muscles, right? So in other words, my breath, really, as I breathe, I want to feel movement all the way into my pelvic floor, all the way into my back, my ribs.
Right.
And your vocal support is really like your lower belly.
Right.
So if I'm not even considering that part and instead I'm like tensing from my throat to do it,
right,
I'm not only like limiting my power, I could also just be like tensing and fatiguing and maybe like hurting myself.
I can definitely feel that. And I also felt that the breath, in terms of doing Shakespeare, like, you know, those long soliloquies, and, you know, as Romeo, I was on stage, you know, a big chunk of time. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I also just felt like in order to deliver those speeches with the punctuation and the correct way, learning how to engage my breath and what's the proper term? What's the proper word for it? It's not holding my breath or sustaining it, I guess.
Yeah.
What would you say is what an actor's doing in order to do that soliloquy?
I think of it as what you're
really technically doing right. is modulating your breath, okay. right? Or so that you can sustain your breath for a whole thought.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And another thing that I'm always reminding my students is that your breath is caused by a thought, unless you're like just breathing to survive, right? That's an autonomic thing. It's just happening. But whenever I'm speaking, whenever we're talking to each other right now, I'm never going, Eddie, ask me a question, expand my ribs, engage my belly and go, right? Like you ask me a question, I consider it, that thought causes a little bit of an inhale. And then I'm using my vocal support to express that, right?
Yeah.
And where the being able to sustain it comes in is making sure that especially when I have those longer phrases, which we don't tend to use as much in contemporary speech,
correct,
that I have the breath capacity, which really means like I have the ability to expand my ribs, to the flexibility in my body, so that I can take in enough breath and be able to last through an entire thought.
Wow.
Especially when Shakespeare's thoughts are often a little bit longer than how we would express.
Beautiful yet long-winded sometimes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I want to just take a step back and kind of start a little bit, you know, at the beginning and know a little bit more about your story.
Yeah.
I find it so interesting when people go into fields that aren't necessarily like the mainstream.
Yeah.
But they're equally as important, if not more important.
Yeah.
We were just talking about how the voice is connected to acting, to your mindset, to so much more than just elocution and articulation and all the things we were talking about before. So tell me a little bit more about what you do and the technique that you teach.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I am a certified teacher of Fitzmaurice voice work. And I first started training in this work when I was in grad school. So I went to Florida Atlantic University for my grad training. And basically, really, I think why it resonated, I grew up singing, right?
Okay.
So I think I was kind of like, my voice is good. Like people, I have naturally my voice is pretty resonant.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of like, just things that I was born with and I'm gifted with, right?
Yeah.
My pitch is not something that I've necessarily like trained for.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So in a lot of ways, I was kind of like, I got this, like voice class, whatever. Like I know, right? But then what I found was like my voice class and my movement class, which were both very physically oriented,
mm-hmm.
both very body oriented. Those were the moments where I was finding the most joy in my work, was feeling the most connected in my work, and then found that like my acting in my other classes and on stage, that it was often the exercises that I was doing in my voice class or my movement class that was really like working the best.
That's really impressive to be young and to know and to be that aware and to take a liking to something like that, the movement and the voice.
Yeah, it was not... I was a little bit more mature. You know, I was in grad school like 24 to 26.
Okay. Right.
So like, 19-year-old Ryan was like, this is dumb. Why are we shaking our legs? Like end of story. Right. But mid 20s, Ryan enjoyed it a little bit more. Mm. And again, not because I was like, voice work is important,
right.
but because I went, holy shit, I am better at this because of the exercises that we're doing in here.
Yes.
I feel so much more connected to my scene partner. I feel like there's so much more emotional capacity, emotional range that I'm experiencing. And the only thing that's really different is that I'm now taking these classes, right? So the reason that it resonated with me was because of my work as an actor and how it was helping my practice.
Very interesting. And can you talk a little bit more about that? What exactly was the voice work and that training allowing you to do with your partner? How are you being able to be more affected and affect your partner?
Yeah.
Do you know, what was it about that work?
I think it's mostly because so much acting training, and this is not all, but so much acting training is analysis.
Mm,
and it's It's writing down your beats, and it's writing your objective and your tactics. And so what I found myself doing was just like really focusing on the intellectual element of things. And then when I would go to voice class, it was like, yeah, you can consider all those things, but also just like move your body, right? And so as I would be exploring different physical exercises for opening up my breath, I would be doing monologues and then finding myself like, whoa, I was yelling that. That's surprising. Right. Like I never would have intellectually thought that, but that felt like what I wanted to do in that moment, and what an interesting impulse, and that opened something up. Or suddenly I'm crying in this piece, or I'm laughing in this piece. Mm. And it was all because I had taken the intellectual work, which yes, is important, but I had really then began to integrate it into my whole body.
Yeah.
Because we don't in our lives think like, I need something from Eddie and I'm going to use seduction to get it from him. Like, I will have these impulses and the way that I am affected.
You just are, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The way that I'm affected is actually like by felt sensations. Emotions are physical sensations that we feel.
Right.
So the more I'm opening up my body, the more I'm breathing, the more I'm going to feel.
It makes so much sense.
Yeah.
It makes so much sense. And so is that specifically Fitzmaurice's technique?
Not necessarily.
So what kind of differentiates Fitzmaurice, or what like what defines Fitzmaurice's technique?
I describe voice work, and specifically like the different types of voice work, as like same room, different doors, right?
Yeah.
Like ideally they're all going to get you to the same place.
Okay.
It's how they get you there, the approach that's going to be a little bit different.
Right.
And really as an actor, finding an approach that works for you. There are many books of other voice teachers that I've read that I love, and there are parts of that book that I go, nah, I don't agree with that,
right?
I don't like that, right? Fitzmaurice voice work, what I liked about it, like there was other types of voice work that I had first that was very image focused and relaxing and inviting different images into your body and seeing how that would affect you, which now I think is beautiful.
Right.
But when I was younger and when my body was probably just not as sensitive, I remember just getting really distracted and that it felt like, you know, like trying to meditate when you have like a distraction,
gotcha.
Right? You know, that it just was not happening easily.
It's impossible. Yeah,
yeah.
I get that.
Where Fitzmaurice voice work, yes, there is absolutely like relaxation to it, but I would say probably the most signature element of it is what Catherine Fitzmaurice calls destructuring. Mm. So, and basically that is like the warm-up technique of Fitzmaurice voice work. So destructuring, the term for that comes from like we all have different habits of holding our body, of different habits of how we control our breath,
right?
Either by holding our breath a lot, or sometimes if we have like yoga or meditation practices, we're really managing our breath so that we're very used to like calming ourselves down.
Mm. And even that's a form of control.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It is. Yeah. And again, not like terrible,
right?
But it is a version of controlling,
right?
Where in acting, hopefully I'm allowing myself to just go.
That's right?
Right.
Yes.
So destructuring refers to like, we're trying to break up those patterns.
Oh, okay.
And it's a series of exercises where you are releasing the body so that you can expand your ribs, so that your back can open up. So it's from a very... In some ways, it's very traditional,
right?
It's trying to open up your body so that you can breathe as easily as possible.
Right.
And so that you have the ability to support your voice the way that you are intended to, right?
Yeah.
So there's that technical thing. But then it's also, we're actually like working directly with the nervous system while doing it. So it engages an autonomic tremor.
Uh-huh.
And your autonomic nervous system is where your is like the part of your breath is controlled by both the central nervous system and the autonomic nervous system. Central nervous system is where you control,
right?
I want to say something right now. I want to be able to breathe right now. We're very good at controlling our breath.
Oh, yeah.
Central nervous system. Autonomic is that automatic survival breathing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Right. And as an actor, I'm much more interested in getting to that place because it means that I'm allowing my body to really be breathing impulsively, which means that I'm going to be much more connected to, I'm going to be much more affected rather by the person in front of me, the circumstances, because I'm not controlling my breath. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Completely.
So the really, I think the most signature part of Fitzmaurice voice work specifically is the tremor work, the destructuring, the exercises that they do for opening up the body,
right,
connecting to your nervous system. And why it really resonated with me too is because it's also really intelligent presence work.
Okay.
In other words, like, what am I helping me be present with what matters?
Right.
I could be present with my character thoughts, or I could be present with my nervousness and trying to get rid of that.
Right.
Where actually one of like the fundamental pillars of Fitzmaurice voice work is helping you find what will help me be in flow.
Oh, it's not kind of pretending that the nerves aren't there or like, and
no,
trying
they
to trick
are.
Yourself. Right.
Exactly. They're involuntary.
Right.
Yeah.
It's more so what am I going to, right. What you're saying is like, how can I get in flow with the character or how can I just be in flow with my body?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's
And so nerves might be part of that.
Right.
There's also tools for helping me deal with the nerves, but there's a, without getting into too much detail, because I think we'd all like fall asleep without like doing the exercises, right? But there's a bunch of exercises that are really helping you with the more traditional vocal elements of things,
right?
Breathe easily,
right?
So that you can speak easily,
correct?
Right? But then there's also the things like what I give my attention to matters. And if I'm being present with my nerves and trying to get rid of my nerves, that is going to affect my breath.
Yeah.
And it might make my breath shorten actually quite a lot.
Mm.
So becoming aware of, ooh, I want to give my attention to the person in front of me, for example.
Yeah. Juliet was great to give my attention to.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I can't focus on my nerves if instead I'm with the person in front of me.
Right.
And in some ways it's like, duh, right? That's most acting technique.
Absolutely. And thinking back to our work together, here's the misconception, I think, and you can speak more on this, that I think most actors think when they're going into a voice technique class that we're going to be doing kind of what they were doing in the King's Speech and just I really thought that we were going to be doing. I thought I was going to be, you know, having to do my monologue in here 50,000 times or anything. And from the get-go, it was more about that autonomic breath that you were talking about, that tremor. I remember doing that very often and connecting to that first. And a lot of laying on the pillows that you had, you know what I mean?
Yeah. We're draping, I'm giving you grapes and just laying on pillows.
There was no voice work at all. We didn't even speak.
I just give you wine.
Yeah, exactly. And but you know, there was such a relaxation, and in that same, like two sides of the same coin, there was so much focus in my body at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. And I think it can be contradictory, but it was really helpful. And to all the points that you're describing about the flow and such.
Yeah.
I had a question though, you know, okay, here's like, I feel like the word diaphragm is like this holy grail of a word for breath.
Yes.
What is the diaphragm? Let's just, I need to know once and for all how important it is it for our breath and for voice and things like that?
Yeah. So
what's your diatribe on the diaphragm?
Here we go. So the first thing I'll say about the diaphragm, like there are different voice teachers believe different things. Like some voice teachers go, the diaphragm is an involuntary muscle. You shouldn't even talk about it because you can't really control it anyway.
Hmm.
I am a proponent of, it's really good to know what it does because even though it's a lot of work to control my diaphragm, I can control a lot of other things around it.
Okay.
So, but here's the basic function of it. So, if you If you picture a basketball, you cut it in half, the top half of the basketball, right? You've got this nice dome. Yeah.
That's right.
Imagine that that's your diaphragm. Yeah. And then you put it right at the base of your ribs so that you've got this dome shape all the way around in your back, in your front of your chest. Yeah.
Okay. So right under the pecs.
Exactly. Okay. So it's, it separates your lungs.
Okay.
Your lungs are right on top of the diaphragm.
Right.
Your lungs from like your stomach and your intestines and all of those lower organs. Yeah. So as you breathe in, as you inhale, the diaphragm flattens down towards the pelvis.
Okay.
And then as you exhale, it goes back into that dome shape.
Oh,
so that's inhale, exhale, inhale, exhale, right?
Right.
Diaphragm goes down as I breathe in, goes back into the dome shape as I breathe out.
Okay.
Again, mostly involuntary. So some teachers are like, don't worry about it, right? But if you go ahead and like just suck in your stomach for a minute, this my favorite thing to help people feel the diaphragm, right? Yeah. And then notice as you breathe, there's probably like a tightness that you're feeling in your chest as you do this, right?
Yep.
And that's because since the belly is engaged, since the those abdominal muscles are tightening and probably then also the muscles of the ribs and the back, since those are tightening, now what's happening is that the diaphragm doesn't have the same amount of space to drop down on that inhale.
Gotcha.
And so then the top of your ribs are trying to expand, right? So that your lungs can get more space, but there's not as much room to do that, right? So, and if we did that for long enough, it would start to simulate a feeling of anxiety, right? That feeling of the tight
chest. That short, tight breath,
right? So it's important for feeling like free breath capacity, right? When people say like breathe from your diaphragm or speak from your diaphragm, that's where I think it's problematic because it's confusing.
What does it even mean?
How do I do that?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yes.
Ultimately, what we're talking, when we're talking about breathing from the diaphragm, what I think that means is like, hey, soften your belly, soften your pelvic floor so that your diaphragm can do its job. And if you're engaging any muscles, either because you're like, I want to look thin. Okay. Right. Or like some habitual just squeezing in general.
Right.
If I'm holding at all, that's going to keep my diaphragm from doing its job. When people say speak from your diaphragm, what that really means is that I'm engaging my core just a little bit. And I want to be so clear, this is different than flexing.
Okay.
Right? Like not like engage your core, meaning squeeze and brace like that and just tighten through here. It's a little bit of just pulling the belly in just a smidge in order to modulate your breath.
Right?
So as I pull in my core just a little bit, it goes up against my diaphragm, like a trap door, because your core is right underneath your ribs, all the way down into your pelvic floor, into your back. So I engage that a little bit. It goes up against the diaphragm and that modulates my breath. It slows it down so that I have enough breath to last me for that thought, whether it's Shakespeare's thoughts or shut up.
Yes.
Hi. Hello. Right? It's the support. The diaphragm support is really technically your core.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. That clears things up. And I remember asking that question when we were working together too.
Yeah.
Because I just remember using so much of my throat, like, and so much of my lungs and breathing from up here and you know, pushing from my chest. When you finally told me how to bring it to the diaphragm and bring it to that core area, that light belly.
Yeah.
I do a lot of yoga and what they like to talk about is bringing your navel in.
Yeah.
But it, but I get the sense that it's kind of at a very, it's a very tense kind of flexing kind of a thing, you know?
In yoga?
Yeah, like in a plank position, you know what I mean? Like bring it tight.
Yep.
So I, and as an athletic guy, I just tended to walk around with that tight flex. And obviously as an actor in Los Angeles, you know, so I just, I remember my, you know, my stomach and my belly just being more free while doing Romeo on stage. And, and I've brought that into my work on film sets as well.
Yep.
The only thing though, you know, moving towards the film aspect is that I felt that I lost my ability and the confidence to express my voice at its full potential and full range.
Yeah.
I was tending to lean into what they call what you vocal fry.
Yeah.
You know, the that very raspy
and kind of creaky. Yeah.
And I don't know if Leo does it. He has some type of intensity and I don't know if it's from his throat. He's just so good anyway.
I think you just like demoed it. Like there's like a tightness in general that's happening.
Right.
Some of the time.
And as a, you know, and for me as an edgy actor, a guy who gets, you know, typecasted, whatever, casted as these edgier kind of tough guy roles, I tend to do that. Do you have any advice on how to kind of break from the vocal fry a little bit? And also, what is vocal fry, if you can explain it for our listeners?
So vocal fry literally is where part of your vocal folds, so like one half of your vocal folds, is vibrating the way that it would for voice. So if I were to go, ah, or right now I'm speaking fully on voice,
right?
Yeah. So one half is vibrating the way that the vocal folds are intended to for speaking, singing, et cetera, right? The other half of the vocal folds is vibrating, but vibrating way slower. Mm. So that's where you have that that creak sound. So vocal fry then is like some, there's a little bit of vibration happening so that you get some voice. So there's like some pitch that's happening that's changing, right? But there's also that part of my voice that's really like creaking. As far as like what that basically means, and it is different for every person, like there's things that I'll look out for when somebody comes to me with it, but what it really is there's a tension somewhere. Either it's right in the throat, right, like I'm literally tensing the muscles around my larynx, tensing my throat, like there's some habitual holding there. It could be in my ribs, so doing some exercises to open up my throat down through my rib cage all the way down into my belly, like that could be enough to just, oh, I've opened up that breath channel. There's a column of air that I wasn't feeling before. That could be
right.
But also like adding the vocal support to that is part of it. And I think what I make clear, because, you know, I teach at a school that is training for the film and television industry. Like it is not a theater-based program. They do some theater, but it's mostly on camera work. And what I'm constantly reiterating to them is that we don't do the support just for volume. Yes, it will be a necessity for you whenever you get on stage.
But when you're mic'd on set.
It's still useful because what I'm ultimately doing is I'm literally connecting to my gut whenever I'm speaking from support. And like I can speak so quietly. I can speak with like an intimacy, right? And still be using my support. It's not saying that if I do this, then that means that I'm going to be really loud and I'm going to like blast the camera, right? I can have such subtlety with my voice. I can speak really quietly and have the support, or I can be using the support to really fill up a much larger space.
Absolutely.
And I calibrate that and I have an awareness of the person I'm talking to, but it's serving you regardless of the medium.
That's so helpful, because I just think I was falling into the trap of thinking that if I'm playing a character who's intense, that my voice has to be tense and I have to be in tension. And I worked with an actor on a show and he played kind of this underground lord, you know, this underboss or whatever. Underground crime boss. There we go. That's
there we
the
go.
Phrase I was looking for.
And I'm picturing the rat from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
No, he wasn't a rat. It was way cooler than that, you know. But, you know, the way he, I remember just watching him and the ease of his voice. Yeah. And I remember clocking that. It was definitely not what I was doing. I was doing the more like intense Leo thing and pushing. And he was just so relaxed. And he still, what you were saying, was able to convey intensity. Still scared the shit out of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he could be right there next to me. I was terrified.
Yeah.
But there was no straining in his throat.
Yeah.
And I think that displayed more of who the character was and more power than him trying to affect his voice in a certain way.
Yeah.
And I think that's a learning lesson for actors.
I agree. Yeah. And I always tell, this is especially, I see this with like young actors.
Right.
But where they go, oh, this monologue, I'm supposed to be sad. So then they start putting on sad voice, right? When they're not actually feeling in their whole body that, or the same thing, like I'm mad. Right. So this is my mad voice.
Right.
And it just becomes disconnected. Mm. If I jump straight to sound, then I am bypassing my whole body.
Right.
And I'm really giving my attention to how I think I should sound instead of allowing myself to be affected and letting my voice really be a byproduct of that.
Mm.
And I think like the example of that, like Crime Boss, right? Being it's like such a good example of actually the most, I think the people that we are drawn to, the people that have seemingly like the most power are the ones who seem most connected to their voice.
It's so true. Yeah.
And I think that's why, I keep talking about her because I'm fascinated, but Elizabeth Holmes, who was the Therion person, there's like the HBO doc and everything.
Yes.
But she's...
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So she like
I'm in the middle
really
of that.
Pitched her voice down. Yeah. She has this like kind of bananas voice.
She does.
And I heard it and I was like, oh, she wants to sound lower because she wants to sound like a quote man.
Oh, that's insane.
Yeah. And it's so apparent that she's like pitching herself down to sound more masculine.
Yeah.
Because there is this perception of like... lower, more connected equals more powerful.
Wow.
She, in jumping for a sound, sounds crazy.
Yeah.
Yes, she does sound like deeper, but I think her voice is kind of bananas, right?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, right?
Yeah, so I think it's almost always a mistake, unless we're talking about like voiceover work.
Right. Okay, right.
I think it's almost always a mistake to go straight to vocal sound.
Yes.
I'm always going, what would cause, like what causes are happening?
Right.
In my body, and that, yes, that might change my sound, but that it's always a byproduct of something authentic in my body.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And I think it's dispelling some of the kind of the myths that we've heard around voice and around doing performance.
Yeah.
Like it came to my mind when we're doing stage, it's always like, you got to reach the back row.
Yeah.
As a young actor, what does that translate to?
Right.
I'm yelling.
Exactly.
I need to scream then.
Yep.
And again, just going back to our work, you know, I was able to reach the back row without screaming, without losing my voice, because I had to do a performance, you know, three times in the weekend and then every single week for whatever it was, 4 months or two, 3 months, whatever it was. So I think it's things like that and not being afraid on set, you know, in terms of it being your first time or you're a guest star, you're a co-star and you haven't done your vocal practice. You talk about... kind of this method about you tell the story about the marathon runner.
Yeah.
Can you tell that? Like, tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah.
I think it's really cool.
I think of any sort of practice, whether it's a voice practice or an exercise practice, meditation, whatever the specific context is, as that it has to be a practice. Like, I can't wait until I get a gig or an audition to start pulling out these exercises because it takes time to integrate them. The example that I use, like most grad programs, especially in the US, most grad programs are 3 years long. And the main reason for that is because that's about how long it takes for your voice for you to first like start to remove any habits that are getting in the way. Secondly, to be able to integrate the new useful habits, but for a while, in order to do that, you have to think about it a lot,
right?
For a while, I think it took me like a year before I did the vocal support without having to think about it.
Yeah.
And then it takes a while to like, okay, now I know how to do all of this. I'm not thinking about my voice at all. It's just there for me in my acting and I get to really explore being in flow.
Right.
It takes time for that to happen. Mm. So if I am waiting until like, okay, I booked an audition tomorrow. Okay, I'm going to start doing my voice practice today. Like it's as if, and this is the marathon example, like if you had a marathon that you're running on Saturday, you're not going to start training 2 days before it.
Right.
your body will not be prepared. That will be better than nothing.
Right.
But you need months, if not years, of a practice so that your body is primed and ready to go. And then you can tailor your warm up. You can tailor your exploration to the specifics of that particular gig.
Right.
Right. That particular character. But I think also because there's just that stress of like, it's too much for you to try to navigate.
Right.
If you're also worried about, will they be able to hear me? And, well, God, my throat is hurting. Right. And they're also asking me to do an accent or all of the various things, not to mention I'm new and I'm on set.
Exactly.
And that's affecting my breath because I'm feeling the nervousness of that.
Right.
You will make your life so much easier, not to mention you'll also just be more relaxed and at ease if you have a practice.
So you would recommend to actors to incorporate a voice class into their investment of if they want to be an actor.
100%.
That's something,
And I know I'm biased because I teach voice classes and I charge money for classes, but I trust me, I didn't join this because I thought the money would be like great, right? But because of my, as an actor, my experience as an actor, how much it's what grounded my work.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. Like the acting techniques, the quote acting classes, like, yeah, absolutely. Learned so much in those.
Right.
I have been in LA, an LA acting class, right? And it was amazing for me.
Right.
But it's still my root understanding of how my breath,
right,
which is the fuel for everything, right? My understanding of that and my body, that's really what I find like allows me to have just such a range that I did not have before voice work.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Could you possibly give just a little snippet of some, like your routine, maybe if you were going for an audition, you know, just for the listeners at home, like something that they can kind of, to maybe more so understand the Fitzmaurice and kind of understand what they would be doing a little bit.
So I think that as far as the specifics of Fitzmaurice voice work, I think that would probably be too difficult to explain on a podcast.
Especially while they're driving.
Yeah.
You got that.
But I do think like having a general understanding, you know, of, we talked about the diaphragm already and that the lower back, the belly, the pelvic floor, that whole part of your torso, that lower half of your torso, we don't tend to think about that as being related to our voice. Mm-hmm. And yet it so is. Your ribs are really integral to your voice. Your neck being nice and released is integral to your voice because the whole body is connected. Your shoulders, your knees locking can affect your breath and your voice, right? So anything that is going to help you relax, or anything that's going to help you relax as well as find more opening, especially in your torso, is great. So that could be sometimes some exercises that I'll do. I will, especially if I only have a little bit of time.
I was going to say, you're 5 minutes, you forgot, you know what I mean? You're in the car. Yeah.
I will, if I have like, I have an audition later today, I'm feeling anxious, I'm feeling nervous, and that's really resonating as like tightness in my belly or my back. What I will do is I will lay in front of my couch, like lay down on the floor and then prop my legs up, like my calves.
Yep.
Onto the couch.
Yeah.
So then what that's doing, that's helping my whole back make contact with the floor. This is called a restorative rest. I can do that for 5 minutes, like 10 minutes is really ideal. I could literally just set a timer for 10 minutes and just resting in that position.
Really? You're not doing anything vocally, not doing any...
You could, especially if you want to multitask. Okay. Like I could be warming up my articulators. I could be humming.
Okay.
I think singing is a great vocal warm up, really anything that's going to get you feeling good, feeling open, working your whole range, right? That can be nice, but just... being in that position is great because the weight of your thighs is going right into your pelvis.
That's right.
And then it's helping the back release. So then also your abdominals, which might be a little bit tense normally, they're really releasing. And that's a great way to feel your breath going all the way down into your pelvic floor. It also just like feels really good. It's a good thing to do like right before bed even.
Yeah.
Like that sort of thing. That might be, I probably wouldn't do that right before I leave because that might make me feel almost like too relaxed.
Okay.
Right. So it depends on the context.
Okay.
If I'm wanting to like wake up my body, then I want to, I start from like feet up, right? So I can do ankle rolls to warm up those joints, changing directions, doing some knee circles the way you might, if you've ever done like high school track, like you'll do things like that, right?
Right.
Hip circles for opening up the hips. The spinal roll down that I feel like everybody has probably done. If you've ever taken an acting class, right?
Yeah.
You've done the like standing up, drop your chin to your chest, roll down until you come in a forward fold so that your spine is unfurling. That's really great. Your spine is a huge resonator, as in like sound vibrates off of it. I like doing like a squat, like a frog squat, or you hold like a sumo pose,
yeah, yeah.
Pose,
I see it
right?
as a sumo, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's great because it's opening up the belly, the back, your pelvic floor, right?
Yeah.
I'll do shoulder swings, like where I'm as if I'm like doing like underhanded softball,
right?
Because that's helping release the joints of my shoulder blades against my ribs. And even just like basic like stretching, extending my arms up, stretching to the side to open up my ribs, stretching my neck side to side, chin to chest, that sort of thing. Anything that is just waking up your body.
Yeah.
Anything.
That's
and,
so amazing.
And of course, like this is the general thing. There are classes that you can go to, mine or there's tons of voice teachers in the city. Teaching many different techniques and finding a teacher that works for you. Right. I often have clients that are like, I just need a warm-up technique. And we'll do a few sessions where I'm going, great, I'm just structuring like your personalized class so that you have a practice
that's so cool.
that makes sense for your body.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I have students who, like I teach a weekly Sunday voice class, and I have students who have been in that class for like 2 years and they, that's just what they do every Sunday.
Yeah.
They come and that's their practice and they practice on their own as well. But having that regularity, just keeps it fresh for themselves.
Absolutely. That is so helpful. You talked about kind of other teachers in the area.
Yeah.
But I noticed that you also do work with accents.
I do.
And
And
I read on your website that you say there's no standard American accent.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
So there is a quote, standard American.
Because like, I get it on my auditions all the time, like, do an American accent. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like well, and you're like, I'm from America, so therefore it's an American accent, right?
Yeah, exactly, right.
And, you know, like, I don't even mean this in like a correcting, like there's a politically correct way. But the reality is that most of the time when people say standard American, what they mean is sound like a white person. Sound like the general American white person. Typically, they're talking about like a Midwest accent, right? I am from Southern Indiana. So for the most part, my accent was a pretty good example of a, quote, general American accent.
Right.
But especially when we talk about diversity, right? One, not all white people sound that way. Some people of color have a, quote, general American accent, have the features that are most common for a general American accent.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of speakers in this country who do not have those features. And obviously that doesn't make them any less American than me, right?
That's right, yeah.
So the voice work that I teach, which is called, or the speech work rather that I teach, which is called Knight-Thompson speech work,
okay.
part of what I love about really their philosophy is that it's so oriented around, like, we're not ever teaching like one standard accent. Like, we can 100%, like, you're getting calls for the quote standard American accent, and you're going to shoot yourself in the foot if you go, no, I refuse. Like, right. This, like, that will limit you in some ways, maybe.
Yeah, right.
So if you have it in your budget, if your agent recommends it, right, and you want to do like a more general American accent, yeah, I teach the so-called general American accent that will give you the basics of like the most common features of an American accent, right?
And what's the most common? Is it like that back glottal, like guttural sound? It's in the back of our throat?
I think it totally depends, on where you're from, right? Oh, so right. Like for like, if you're like a southerner and you have like a hard R sort of thing, yeah, right? Then I would work on helping you relax your tongue, because even though there's some tensing that happens in the tongue for like that American R sound,
right,
it's not as tense as like that deep South, like hard R, like Texas R, yeah, kind of thing, Tennessee, Kentucky R,
yeah,
sound, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If I'm from New York, right, well, maybe, yeah, I'm like rounding my vowels more, like thwat and that, yeah, sort of thing.
Water.
Then, yeah, I'm exactly, coffee, then I'm gonna go, yeah, oh, actually, like, you don't round your lips as much. It's water, it's thwat.
Right.
Those sorts of things. It really depends upon the speaker. I have a lot of clients who English is not their first language.
Oh, right. Okay.
And so if I'm speaking to a French person, then I'm definitely going to be focused on pronunciation, but I'm also pointing out like the American musicality.
Ah.
If I'm speaking to a Spanish speaker,
right,
right, then, and as in like Spanish is their first language,
right,
musicality is going to be super important too, because English stresses words differently,
right,
than in Spanish or, oh, yeah, French. So musicality is part of the thing that we focus on. The physical, the posture, like how you use the articulators, mm-hmm, matters, as well as, nope, most people in this country pronounce the word this way.
Yeah.
So this is the pronunciation.
Yes.
Sometimes,
right,
it's that,
right,
direct.
Okay. Yeah. No, that definitely is helpful. And is that how you would kind of approach doing an accent for your own self? Like, you would,
totally,
you would look at the posture, the musicality.
Totally.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's,
yeah. And this
really
is,
cool,
to be clear, like that's in Knight Thompson's speech work. They break it down into like those four areas. It's people, who are the people that have this accent, posture, how do I use the articulators, the musicality, the rhythm, the stress, the intonation, the,
right,
pitch that they use,
right,
how they stress their words, as well as the pronunciation.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. I could geek out about it. Yeah.
We're going to, you know, start wrapping up. I just wanted to ask you, kind of make a shift to the entrepreneurial side.
Yeah.
You started a podcast.
Yeah,
yeah,
I did.
It's called, Speaking Of.
Very good.
Speaking Of Conversations on Voice, Speech, and Identity with Ryan O'Shea.
That's me.
That's so much fun. What brought it about, and like, how long have you been doing it?
Yeah, I released the first three episodes on May 10th, which,
nice,
was also my 33rd birthday.
Oh,
so,
happy birthday.
Thank you.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, really, you know, it's only been a few months that I've started recording, but I just really love podcasts.
It, like, makes sense. That, someone in voice is doing podcasting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So I think I'm, you know, also as an artist,
yeah,
going like, what are the things that I get excited about? And these days, mostly what I'm doing is teaching voice and speech. So,
right,
my creativity is really channeled mostly through that.
Right.
So I just got really excited about this idea of doing a podcast.
Yeah.
And it's really only like once I started recording the episodes that the identity part came in, which is so obvious, but
yeah,
the way we sound says something about us. It tells us where we're from.
Mm-hmm.
It tells you like things like, how do we want to be perceived,
yeah,
right? Like you talking about like that, like held guy,
yeah,
like that sort of thing of,
right,
tensing, right?
Right.
Versus somebody who's got like ease in their voice.
Right.
That it's so related to identity. So,
I wonder if I was even coming off as scary as I thought I was. Like,
you're a pretty good actor. I'm sure you were. You were great.
Oh, I cringe sometimes looking at that,
yeah,
stuff. But anyway, go on with the podcast.
No. So each episode I chat with a guest who has a specific question about voice, speech, presence.
We spoke together earlier today on Vocal Fry and kind of what we were talking about in this podcast.
Yeah.
Being on set and being an actor on film and if there's a difference between stage and film.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so a lot of what I talk about are concepts. Like sometimes if you just know the conceptual, that's enough to go, oh, that's what I'm doing. Right.
Right.
But then sometimes exercises as well. Here are some things that you can actually do right now as you're listening, kind of thing to help you as the listener with your question along with the guest.
And are you noticing any challenges in podcasting?
I think the biggest challenge is just that it's a aural medium, that I can hear what's happening, but so much of the work that I do, like I'm speaking visually, so it definitely provides a challenge for finding the balance between being as specific as possible but also still being useful. And I think there's just some things that it's actually not as useful to do just the recording, like the sound of my voice, because if you don't have an image that goes with it can be really confusing. And actually you could create more tension than is useful because you're not seeing the specifics of what it is I'm asking.
Right. Well, I think you're very good at it. So,
well, thank you.
You're awesome.
Thanks.
What are, I'm almost done. What are you most proud of in your career, like, or in life?
Oh, wow.
Because I hadn't seen you for a year. And,
yeah.
I don't know.
You know, I think it really is, this is, in some ways, I'm not a great business person because I don't do a ton of marketing and like, man, I'm bad at social media. I just don't enjoy it. But that, like, with that being said, my practice is going pretty well. Like, I have a regular flow of clients. Yeah. My classes and workshops, like, basically always sell out. You know that I've, at the very least, the word of mouth is really good, which I think probably matters the most.
Yeah.
I'm really proud that I am able to support myself to make a living helping other people. Like,
that's super important.
This particular realm of working really in communication, but not in a way of like, this is how you should sound, but helping people find their authentic voice, their authentic accent for this character or whatever, just feels so good to me. I really love it.
I love that answer. Now, where can our listeners find out more about you, your classes? You talk about your workshops on Sunday.
Yeah.
Where can they go find all that information out?
So my website is voiceandspeechwithryan.com.
Amazing.
So that's definitely the easiest place. I also have, you know, after I talk shit on it, I also have like an Instagram and a Facebook. Voice and Speech with Ryan O'Shea is the same as how you would find me on Facebook. Instagram, I'm Ryan O'Shea, RYNOSHEA. But website is definitely the most reliable.
And I'll have all that information in the show notes in case I was like laughing or talking between all your, we were just saying there. Do you have any requirements to take on clients?
To take on clients, like, not really.
Like, will you take on a heavy smoker or something?
I would. Yeah. I mean, there might be a conversation of like, ooh, your challenges maybe are related to all of that heavy smoking. No, I think the only requirements, like every once in a while I have somebody that will go, I just need one voice lesson and that is all. Right. And I'll typically go like, ooh, you know, we can do that, but I need you to know that it's probably not going to be enough. Like, you need a few sessions in order to be able to actually implement things, you know? So if people want to join my class, and I do require prerequisites, just again, so you have the experience. You have the knowledge in your body before then doing the regular class. But I also teach like workshops, and there's no prerequisites there. Yeah. Like it's show up and be kind. that's the prerequisite.
And are you just based in LA right now? Like you're not doing anything bi-coastally right now. So just Los Angeles.
No, yeah. That's cool. Every once in a while I will like Indiana is where I'm from. Like I'll do workshops in Indianapolis, you know, but for the most part, yeah, I'm here in LA.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything that you might want to mention before we go that I forgot to ask? Any about expression or the breath? Any parting words? What it's like to be a modern actor, a modern entrepreneur in today's world? Anything? Yeah.
I think I would just encourage people to explore voice work and really being open to what it could be. Because I think, as you pointed out, and I remember the first time I heard this, I was really surprised, but somebody said, it was a young actor in a class that I was teaching, and he said something like, I don't know that I want to do this because I feel like it's going to make me sound fake. Mm. It's going to make me sound inauthentic. Yeah. And just to really make it clear that voice work, yes, does serve a technical, it does have some technical goals to help you be more efficient with your breath, your voice. But that in my teaching, and I think most voice teachers that I know, we're always working from the perspective of the actor, and that we're helping you connect more to your humanity and therefore to the humanity of your character. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to make you sound perfect or to make you sound like a particular ideal, but rather to help you feel more connected to your whole self so that your voice is really expressing more fully all of that life that you're finding in your acting.
Well said.
There
amazing.
We go.
Amazing. Good end to it. Thank you.